This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and I recently decided to give Sterling Soap Company's Ground Breakfast Blend coffee a try. While brewing, the aroma was inviting, and the taste? Lightly sweet and delicious, as the texture of this amazing coffee was sweet and smooth, as I experienced a coffee with a velvety texture, almost creamy. Sterling's breakfast blend is light but in no way weak, with a high quality taste and smell. My wife and I are now hooked on Sterling Soap coffee, and you should be too. Check out their coffees and other products at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Gridiron America Today. Happy Canada Week for everybody who might be watching in Canada or even isn't watching in Canada. And to my buddies here, Dave and Mike, welcome. Hey, good to see you. And how's it going? How's it going over there in America?
Crazy with the World Cup, but, you know, we're getting by. How's life over there in Japan?
I'm not complaining. Not complaining at all. So we just had week four of the CFL wrap up, and I figured let's get right into week four because it was yet another great weekend of CFL play with, if you look at the week four scoreboard, some real close games on paper. But when you dig deep kind of with some of the games, you realize, well, you know, some of those scores are misleading. So, let's lead off here, man, with, starting with Edmonton and Winnipeg. Dave, Mike, you guys watch the game. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a game that came down to the wire. It was a lot of back and forth. And it was definitely one of the more entertaining games to watch, that's for sure. I'll keep it short and sweet, and I'll let Dave give his insight.
Yeah, Edmonton came ready to play. They jumped on Winnipeg early. Winnipeg withstood that, clawed their way back as Winnipeg does, got themselves right back into it. But uncharacteristically, you don't see the Blue Bombers having six fumbles in a game. So that was very surprising to see the ball on the turf that much from them. But at the end of the day, the running game continues to be leading the way for Edmonton, and that sets up the pass. And Cody Fajardo had another good day. I mean, it was really balanced attack, moving the ball down the field very methodically, and at the very end, scoring when they needed to. And I guess it was, as Mike said, it was a very entertaining game that went down right down to the end.
Yeah, right. And it was a 23-18 win by Edmonton over Winnipeg. And the game really was wrapped. I mean, it came down to what, the last 18 seconds of the game, more or less? But the big thing that with this game is how it started, with Edmonton literally just running out of the gate and going up 17-0, which when that happened, I'm like, okay, this is not the Edmonton team that we have seen for the last really 6 years.
Correct. Yeah. And it's good to see. I know the fans, Edmonton, they've been wanting this for probably close to a decade now. And it's good to see all phases of the game really coming together for them on the road in a hostile place where most teams don't do well. And even Winnipeg being down 17-0, they didn't abandon the run. They used their offense. They moved the ball. They got back into position to take the lead late in the game. So it was very entertaining. It was very workmanlike by both teams, and either one could have won it, to be honest.
Yeah. What do you guys think changed with Edmonton this year?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but I mean, they've been down for so long. It was only a matter of time before they kind of figured things out and got it together and put a winning product on the field.
Yeah. To me, that their defenses definitely turned the page. And I think that helped with continued really focusing on run to open up the pass and not be afraid to run the ball on non-traditional running downs in the CFL. You usually see open up with a run, then get a pass, or just start moving the pocket, moving the ball. But Edmonton is definitely looking at running the football and making you beat them with the pass. I mean, Winnipeg still got 100 yards on the ground, but it wasn't big chunks. It wasn't right away. So it was something that I think that holding Winnipeg to 18 points is really something. The defense is really kicking in for them. I mean, I think that's one of the big reasons why they've turned it around.
Yeah, and when you look at how the game started, I mean, you had a opening 100-yard touchdown drive with Rankin, mm-hmm. who, I mean, the dude's a stud. He is the MVP of the early part of the season. That 100-yard drive, you had Dante Daniels fumbling. There's DeBlanco recovered, Edmonton then converted into a 17-point lead. I mean, obviously turnovers were the big story of the game with Winnipeg, but, Edmonton managed to capitalize on pretty much most of Winnipeg's mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other part of it, too, is, Zach Collaros. I mean, the Edmonton defense – I mean, Edmonton's defense strip sacked Collaros twice. So, it's hard to come back from that many turnovers. However, but we know in the CFL you can't. So, and again, Winnipeg was this close to winning it too. I mean, it's not like Edmonton ran away with it at the very end. I mean, it was still, again, we didn't know who was going to win the game until seconds were left. Mm-hmm. So.
But over the course of time, those are the games that in the past Winnipeg has won and Edmonton has lost. And that's a difference. That's the difference there is past seasons, Winnipeg finds a way to win that game. And this time Edmonton found the way to win in Winnipeg, which was an interesting piece to that.
Yeah. And the nice thing too about with Edmonton, it's not like Edmonton's been coming from, I mean, at least in this game, this wasn't a cardiac game. This was not a come from behind win. Edmonton came out early and showed it dominated. I mean, from really kind of from the get go from that first opening drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I would say my only concern is just being too one dimensional for Edmonton. One thing, if I could challenge them, is to really find the balance, especially this early in the season, because you don't want to get into October and even possibly November and what's been working for you isn't working because your running back's got too many miles on them by the end of the season. So maybe kind of lay off the break a little bit. If you can find that, that success in throwing the football.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And, talking about throwing the football, I'm just looking at the stats so Cody Fajardo was 25 of 35 for 267 yards and the winning touchdown drive. Justin Rankin, 106 rushing yards and a touchdown on 15 carries. TJ Luther, key early reception, game-winning touchdown catch. And then you had, you know, the defense, you had Tyrell Ford, Joel DeBlanco, turnover field position, you know, adding fuel to the, helping the offense along. And then you had Noah Taylor and Malik Kearney, who I already said, you know, were doing some serious stripping on the field there. But on the flip side too, you had, and this just tells you how even the game, everybody talks about Edmonton winning, but this was a very even game. You had Zach Kolaris was 24 of 33 for 290 yards and two touchdowns, even with that defensive pressure. And Brady Oliveira was 77 rushing yards, six catches and a touchdown, despite fumbling the ball. And then he had Trey Vival. He had an 83-yard punt return and 105 kickoff and a 105-yard kickoff return. I'm sorry. No, I take that back. And a total of 105 yards of kickoff return yards. So, and their defense did good. So, to me, it was just a very evenly matched. But when I watched the game from that opening drive, I'm like, oh, I think Edmonton's going to win this. That was my feeling. And, you know, it proved right. You guys, yep. Any thoughts?
I'll give you my one last crazy stat from this. Rankin's averaging 8.4 yards a rush. That's on the season. That's crazy. And he has five rushes for over that have gone over 20 yards. The next five guys combined have a total of six.
Dang.
He's got 387 yards in three games and only 46 carries. It's wild. It's only 46 carries. Wild.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a barely. It's like having high miles on a car, but you've used it like three times.
Yeah.
Because every time you take it out for a run, it runs long and hard, and it's, you know, it's all cardio at that point. There's no getting beat up.
But even saying that, Mike is exactly right. They got to find a way to keep him healthy, for the season and the playoffs, because he goes down. I mean, that's the thing. There's not a lot of margin for error when you're with these teams. Like, no one has two running backs. I mean, so it'd be interesting to see. It's like how do you keep that going, but also 18 games plus playoffs is a grind. It's a long season.
You got to take care of that gold goose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And let's see what else we got here. I had a nice PowerPoint planned for this whole show, but apparently with our Streamlabs, our new streaming service, I can't pull up the PowerPoint. It was all nice and shiny and put a lot of work into it. I'm like, damn, nobody can see it. So
called divine intervention.
Probably. Yeah, because now that I'm looking at my PowerPoint here, I'm like, I made some mistakes.
And there'll be a link in the notes of the show to be able to view it, right?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah, I can make this shareable. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, I mean, it's nice and pretty. It's got, you know, it's got a nice graphic of the 55-yard line with the maple leaf on it. I'm like, I was proud of what I did. Now, you know, so, yeah, I'll add a link in the show notes here. After we wrap up and I kick this thing out. So, all right. So, okay. So why do you guys think the Bombers won? And you've already said this, but so why the Elks won and why the Bombers lost? I mean, the Elks own the opening quarter emotionally and physically. This is all the stuff I had written down on this PowerPoint. They converted Winnipeg mistakes into points instead of moral victories, defensive pressure, and Fajardo just looking composed. And I mean, he didn't seem rattled at all out there, even with the pressure coming from the Winnipeg defense. You guys, what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think Winnipeg came out flat and Edmonton came out on fire. And even though they came back and was leading for a moment, you know, it's hard to maintain that lead after going down 17-0.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave?
How many times has the CFL game come down to who has the ball last?
Yeah.
Once again, yeah. I mean, it's the story of this season. Right. It really is. It's like whoever has the ball last, it seems like the offenses make it happen. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to be a defensive coordinator in the CFL this year.
No. Yeah.
Or a special teams coordinator.
Or special teams.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And that's a discussion we'll have here in, you know, about two games from now about the aftermath of that game. And then, of course, you know, talking about the Bombers, four fumbles, you know. And then he had two missed field goals, too. People forget about those.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, to me, those were kind of the keys with when it came to why Winnipeg lost. So whether Edmonton won the game or Winnipeg lost, I mean, you can make an argument either way. Winnipeg, it wasn't a win so much an Edmonton win, but Winnipeg gave the game away. So, but again, that's the beauty. I mean, again, it boiled down to the last second. So, and okay, well, we'll move on to the next game. So we had Toronto was 40-34 over the Rough Riders in a game, a score that looks a lot closer than really what it was. So Dave, Mike, I'll let you start off here. Your thoughts?
I think we talked about this last week. It's still the Chad Kelly show. Toronto is doing what they need to do to win. I did catch the end of that, game just a few minutes before we went on, and definitely the score was misleading when you look at how dominant Toronto was in that game. But again, I think it starts just with good quarterback play. You're going to start seeing in the coming weeks when teams start to really separate themselves, the good from the bad, with the one common denominator, unless you're Edmonton, is going to be quarterback play. So until somebody can take Toronto's offense down a notch or two, it's going to be really tough. But yeah.
I'm sorry, Dave.
I agree 100%. It's been impressive what Toronto has done. When if you think about all the on the field changes, the coaching staff changes, being on the road, consistently traveling, and it's hard to go into Mosaic Stadium and score 40 points. If you're not the home team,
technically they were the home team on this one.
Technically they were. The fans did complain about Saskatchewan wearing those hideous white jerseys. I'm surprised they're really not the fans were not a big supporter of those.
I mean, they look nice.
The prairie jerseys.
Yeah, I mean they look nice, but I mean if you're on the, I mean they look nice if you buy it at the gift store and wear it.
Yeah.
To the game rather than, you know, you're playing. Cause it's like, I don't know. Cause you couldn't see the numbers from where you were at, from what I was reading. It's like, we can't see that. We can't, unless we look at it, the Jumbotron and figure out who it is.
Yeah. And a couple of interesting things from that game is, I don't know how many times this has happened in professional football, but Toronto scored 10 points in each of the four quarters.
Yeah,
that was odd. I don't see that.
That's consistency.
That's very specific consistency.
Yes. that was something you don't see too often. And once again, we talked about this before. It's the offensive output by Toronto is just really really surprising, because they really don't. I mean, they still got 100 yards rushing, but they don't have a back. Coming into the season, anybody was afraid of or would key on. And it seemed like the way Toronto had to win was Chad Kelly needed to beat you. And he is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sam Hicks is doing a great job. I mean, opened the game up with that 61-yard run. But it's really interesting to see on paper a truly one-dimensional team putting up points like that consistently with their offense.
Yeah. The thing is, to me too, with this game, when Toronto went up 13-0, I mean, are these the same Rough Riders that won the Grey Cup? Or, I mean, what's going on here? Is this the same team? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the Rough Riders, because they just don't look like the team from last year that won it all last year.
And it could have easily been 17.
Yeah.
Toronto had those, the two plays that Toronto had inside the five were not very good plays, and they had to settle for the field goal, but it could have very easily been 17-0.
Yeah. 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 Just looking at here,
One last thing. And you're talking about, is it the same Saskatchewan team every year? Whoever wins the Grey Cup is going to get picked over by everybody else. They're the target for free agency. 2 years ago, it was Toronto. Toronto lost their entire defensive line. They lost, Chad Kelly to injury, but they lost their entire defensive line. So I think the same thing is happening to a degree to the Rough Riders. And once it, as we talked about, it's an 18-game season. And
right.
Everybody talked about how it looked like Toronto was going to struggle. Are people overlooking them to this point? Are they are they looking at, the roster's a big change? Chad Kelly's a we don't know factor. Are the teams playing into that narrative of Toronto might win 4 or 5 games? They got a whole rig rebuild here, and they're just not focusing like they should be. I don't know. I'm just. For them to 40 points each week start the season is wild. It's wild from a team that was expected or predicted to win 4 or 5 games to be this kind of offensive juggernaut this early in the season is wild.
Yeah. But the thing is, something happens to Chad Kelly. Does that offense fall apart? I mean, everything right now in Toronto revolves around the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
To me, at least, from just sitting here, my perspective from way across the ocean. So getting into that though, if you look at the numbers, so you had Chad Kelly was 23 of 30 for 321 yards, 2 TD passes and a rushing touchdown. Whereas Trevor Harris was 34 of 43 for 409 yards, 2 TDs, but 1 interception. Keyshawn Johnson had 10 for the Riders, 10 catches. I mean, just on paper, this is where I said about on paper, it looks to me like this game should have been the Rough Riders, but obviously the final score tells you different. Thoughts on Trevor Harris? I mean, he hasn't really missed a beat at all.
He's Mr. Consistent. He's a game manager. He's playing the biggest games, and I don't think he lets the pressure get to his head. I think that's the ideal quarterback you want in this league, is somebody who knows what it's like to play in the biggest games, but most importantly, stay healthy and stay consistent.
Yeah. Now, there's one person in particular in this game. There was one play that, I think a lot of people forgot, which to me was kind of the difference breaker, and that was Janarian Grant's 68-yard punt return for a TD. Special teams doesn't get talked about enough, and as we'll talk about in the next game, probably more than it should. That was what kind of broke the back, I think, of the Rough Riders, even though, what was the score of the game again? I can't.
40-34.
Yeah. The game was 6 points, but it could have been that punt return touchdown put Toronto over the top in terms of winning this game, I thought.
I mean, I want to make sure you mention that Saskatchewan was missing some players. Like they are dealing with some injuries. AJ Ouellette was out. So, they are missing players that do contribute. So that obviously that played into this as well. But I don't want to take too much away from what Toronto did too, because that punt return was special. I mean, Grant is by far the best, at least in my opinion, the best special teams player in this league. And every time that ball gets every time he catches that punt, he could be gone. Or every time he touches the ball, I should say, he could go all the way. He's just, he's that good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. And, well, let's see. My final slide up here is I'm looking at my PowerPoint here. Yeah. I mean, really just kind of my takeaway was the Argos got touchdowns from offense and special teams, and it wasn't just on long drives. I mean, they, like you said, they were consistent throughout the game, putting points on the board. And let's see what else here. Yeah, that's really all I got for this game here.
I will say, as I'm just kind of watching the highlights a little bit more as we're talking about this game, Toronto was just so much more physical than Saskatchewan. It just looks like they just men amongst the boys on the offensive line versus Saskatchewan's defensive line. They were just having their way with them, and I really think that set the tone. Even in pass pro, Trevor Harris had a great game too, but again, Chad Kelly was just – he had more good things go his way.
Yeah, yeah. And like you said, in terms of, you know, the defense, I mean, the defense produced for Toronto two huge possession swings, an end zone pick and a late force fumble. So, you know, the defense, you know, we're talking more offense, it seems, with Toronto in this game, but you can't forget what the defense did to give them to pretty much seal the win.
Yeah. And I know for me, it seems like, and please both of you guys, correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like the CFL defenses remind me of Arena Football League defenses.
Oh yeah.
You need to make key stops.
Yeah.
You're not shutting anybody out the way the rules are to the game, but it, like that pick in the end zone, that was a key stop after a long drive. Stop like things like that really, really help. It just seems like it's like the we called it in the early 90s, the Bills defense was the bend, don't break defense and let the Keegan offense go and score, and we'll just keep outscoring you. We may not keep you too low a score, but we're going to make you work for it.
Right. Yeah. Well, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. I was just kind of piggybacking on Dave, what you're saying. Literally, as you said that, I just see a highlight where Saskatchewan, they just took it in against Toronto. Toronto couldn't stop them on a goal line stand. You know, you're going to have your – in any level of football, whether it's American or Canadian football, you want to minimize the home run balls and the big plays. But if you do give it up, you got to have that short-term memory. As Coach always said, the acronyms win. You know, what's important now? And you, if anything else, if you give up that big play and it's first and goal with the one, you're going to have a long four plays in that drive. But, again, that is the mental toughness aspect. And you really got to pin your ears back and be mentally tough if you're in a situation where you're in a goal line stance. So I don't think in that situation Toronto was. I think Saskatchewan was a little bit tougher and wanted it more, overall it didn't matter in the final score. But, again, that might be something down the road that when Toronto plays a more competitive, balanced team, that might be a difference maker. To kind of come full circle, you don't want to give up a big play, but it happens. And when it does, you got to recoup and, you know, what's important now. And you got to find ways to get your defense off the field without allowing a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dave, final thoughts on this game before we go to the next.
That was Jadarian Grant's 11th punt return for a touchdown in the regular season. He's tied for second place now. I mean, he's 15 behind Gizmo Williams, but, 11's pretty good.
Yep. Well, let me move on to the next game, which was kind of the showcase game, at least on TV. What everybody had been talking about really for the last 2 weeks was the game in Kelowna.
The Apple Bowl.
The Apple Bowl. Yeah, the Apple Bowl. You know what? They did a great job with setting up the field, having a temporary stadium. It looked very old school. I've seen pictures of obviously old Empire Stadium in Vancouver, Tempire Stadium, as they called it, when in 2011 when they had to when the dome was being renovated and the Lions had to plan a temporary stadium on the old grounds of Empire Stadium. So this kind of, to me, just kind of reminded me of that. And it was a packed house. I don't know how many people were there, but it looked like every seat there was filled. So, and the fans came out to root for their team, which unfortunately they walked away disappointed with. So 41-33 win by Calgary over BC. And this goes to kind of what I said before. Some games are closer. They look closer than what they really are. And this is a clear example of that. So I don't know, Mike, Dave, let you guys kick off with talking about the game.
So you guys, if you guys ever get a chance to look at a good competitive D2 college football game, I would say the attendance and the atmosphere was just that. The fans were in it. I didn't see a single empty seat in that whole stadium. I didn't know what the situation was, why they were playing in that stadium, so that makes sense. But so for the BC perspective, the fans were really into it. And it was exciting to watch, just seeing the atmosphere and the vibe of the fans. You know, it's crazy. We kind of talked about this off the air. So your defense gave up huge plays. Your offense gave up 4 sacks. And then the defense gave up 2 late touchdowns in the first half. But the fall guy seemed to be the special teams coach for BC. And while maybe to an extent may have been warranted that they needed to make a change, I don't think that was the biggest fish that needed to be fried for the Lions. I think that they had some other issues going on. And that's not to take anything away from what Calgary's doing, but I think that they could have went a different direction with if they're going to fire somebody. I don't know if necessarily it was a special teams coach that needed to go.
Yeah. Social media was entertaining after the announcement came out. One guy said, he goes, I expected this to start with the word Mike and the last name Benavides. That's where it should have. That's the name. Those were the 2 words that should have come out, not the special teams coordinator. But I mean, bottom line is, I mean, BC's 0-3 and I don't see him. I didn't see any improvement from last week at all. I mean, and Calgary, they were 0-2 going into this game. So it's not like they were world beaters. Dave, your thoughts?
Calgary to me was very efficient in what they did. They weren't flashy, but Vernon Adams, I thought, did a really good job behind center for them. They didn't have a great day running the ball either, but 3 touchdown passes definitely helps that a lot. I think Nathan Rourke's close to 500 yards passing. I think that's a little misleading. They had no running game whatsoever, and they seemed to be chasing the game all day. So it was one of those things they needed to do that. And the crowd, by the way, was just under 20,000. So it was a nice crowd. Nice crowd for that. But I don't know. It just seems like BC can't get out of their way. They couldn't make a stop, at least from my perspective. They couldn't make a stop when they needed to. Like one of the things Mike was talking about with the whole win and making that happen. And Calgary was not having their will, but they were able to do things to keep drives going. They were able to do things to get them in position to score points and make sure to keep the pressure on BC throughout the game, even towards the end when BC was playing that quick catch up and getting some points and getting that score a lot closer than it was in the third quarter. But right. I don't necessarily have the answers for BC. It obviously it starts with scoring more points than the other team, but I'm really surprised.
John Madden adage: the key to winning is to score more points.
Definitely, but I'm really surprised at the BC defensive line isn't better than what they are.
Yeah.
That was a strength for them last year. They still have Matthew Betts, on paper, the best defensive lineman in the league, and he's been extremely quiet. And that's not good for them. They need to be able to make plays, get turnovers, and give the crowd something to cheer about. And it just seemed like they didn't cause a fumble. They didn't get an interception, and they just didn't give that great crowd in Kelowna a really reason to get behind them and really push Calgary. Yeah, that would be the best way I could say it.
Right. Yeah.
But once again, taking nothing away from Calgary, they played a very good game. They played a very good road game, almost on some levels, a perfect road game, because they came in, they got the lead, they kept the lead, and they kept the pressure throughout the game. So if you're the Calgary coaching staff, you executed the game plan perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, Nathan Rourke, I mean, numbers wise had a great game, but, you know, again, it's just, you know, I mean, yeah, it always, you know, the other team scoring more points on them. And, so I don't know how they fix it. I don't know how BC turns this around right now. You know, because the schedule's only going to get harder. I mean, there's only eight. They only have eight teams they got to play against all year. But I don't see, unless, you know, until they come up against Ottawa, I don't know where their first win's going to come from.
No, they host Edmonton this Saturday. That's yet another test. Edmonton can go 4-0. They can go in for it. I don't want to say it's a must-win for BC, but at some point you have to start saying they got to show some progress.
Yeah.
Keep close.
And, you know, and it goes, you know, we were talking about special teams. I mean, special teams did give up the decisive return touchdown and help, you know, but special teams has really, I mean, it hasn't been the entire problem for this team at all. And I don't know how firing the, you know, special teams coordinator is going to help the guys on the field play better. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, the coach's job is to call a play and a player's job is to execute. And it doesn't matter what what coach is calling what plays. And I think you're seeing that right now in North Carolina with Bill Belichick. If the players aren't executed the plays, it doesn't matter who's calling them. And actually, I just kind of getting caught up on these highlights from the BC Calgary game. Calgary scored with 54 seconds left before halftime. They kicked the ball off. BC fumbled, and then three plays later, Calgary scored again. Again, I don't think it doesn't matter what, especially special teams. It doesn't matter what play you call. If your players aren't executing, aren't being mentally tough, aren't holding onto the football, that comes down to player accountability. Just like when Calgary threw the ball freehand against BC on that drive and then just ran the ball down their throat to score to go up before halftime. I mean, that's 14 points in less than 30 seconds. So, you know, you can only coach what you can coach. The players, they have to step up. They have to be aware that it's they're getting their butts kicked until they can figure it out.
Okay. Yeah. No, I agree. Well, let's move on to the next game here. The Montreal Ottawa game, which is 37-35, the score of which definitely is a lot closer than what it really was. And I just think for Ottawa, if this would have been a 70-minute game, Ottawa would have won it maybe by 1 point. But as it stands, they came up 2 points short. And but it's really, for Ottawa, it's a tale of two halves, really. So that first half, Ottawa, I don't know, man. I'm sitting there watching it going, looking at the screen going, okay, I guess I'll just look at my phone here because I know how this is going to turn out. And boy, third quarter started, and it's like a different team came out of the locker room. So, Dave, your thoughts?
Well, I guess question for Mike. You would, I would think you would know us better than myself and Greg. You're up 21-6. You're playing arguably the worst team in the CFL. What could your I know there's pride and you want to win, but how hard is it to as a coach and convey it to the players? We got to keep our foot on their throats proverbially and keep going. Or is it just a natural thing to ease off a little bit? Hey, we're up 21-6. We're cruising. And how easy is it to lose focus at games like this?
Yeah, I think it's both the coach and player's responsibility. And that really starts with preparation. They should be mentally prepared to be in a dogfight, but also if things get out of hand, that they have to, players and coaches each, respectfully, they have to maintain that composure until the game is officially over. Just seeing the highlight, it was 21-6 at halftime, and now it's 21-12, and Ottawa just scored again. So, I think that mental toughness for the Montreal defense, they gotta do some soul searching. But then again, you can't take your foot off the pedal if you're the coaching staff. Don't change what's working for you. You know, until the final whistle blows, you have to keep being aggressive. You have to keep playing that you want to win, you don't want to play to lose. You don't want to play to not lose. You want to play to win. And it looks like mentally, Montreal just at halftime, they let off the brake, and props to Ottawa. You know, they made the adjustments they needed to at halftime, but in Montreal, for the most part, they didn't. They failed to do so. But so Ottawa, you know, they stuck in there. But again, when you're down 21-6 at the half, that's a big hole to dig yourself out of. But Dave, to answer your question, I'd say it's both the player and coach responsibility. You have to be mentally prepared, and you have to prepare that way. It needs to be in your game plan. It needs to be in your team meetings. You have to be prepared to execute and be successful, but also understand there's going to be some adversity along the way, and you can't get complacent or give up if you're winning or losing. You have to keep pounding the rock.
Yeah. For me, it just seemed like that third quarter, Montreal just lost focus. It just seemed like they're like, hey, it's 21-6. We got it. Let's run the ball. Let's get, hey, we got a punt. Oh, well. Hey, you know what I mean? It just seemed like there was no urgency until it got to the fourth quarter. It's like, oh, we got a game.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there were two missed extra point kicks, which as I'm looking through the stats here, I'm like, oh, I forgot about that. So going back to what we were saying about special teams, in this game, truly special teams lost you at least an opportunity to win, to at least take it into overtime. I don't know. Just got to look at it. I'm like, but still, you know, but Montreal, I mean, Montreal to me is still the team to beat in as of right now. You know, Hamilton's been playing great, but Montreal to me is still the team to beat. But boy, you take away, you know, the quarterback with Montreal, and I don't know if we have the same team.
Is that Alexander? Is that the Montreal quarterback?
Yeah, David Alexander. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think up until, was it last week, he was undefeated.
Right.
Regular season. Yeah. 15-1 in regular season now.
Yeah. That's what, as long as kind of the piggyback what you said, Greg, as long as he's a quarterback for Montreal, they're going to be tough. But again, in this game, really, they played a very not good Ottawa team, and they only played, Montreal only played good football for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ottawa put points up on them. I mean, they basically put, even though there's only 35 points on the scoreboard, really, two missed extra points away from it being 37 and the game going into overtime. Yep. And who knows that, you know, once it's overtime, who knows what happens there. So this could have easily been an Ottawa win for all practical. I mean, this game to me was a lot closer than what it should have been given the way Ottawa's been looking. But, you know, who knows? Maybe it's just taking time for Ottawa to figure things out. And, you know, in several weeks from now, we could be talking about them being in first place, even though they're 0-3 right now, but battling in a few weeks, battling for first place, you know, in the East.
Well, for me, kudos to Jake Mayer and that offense. They came out that second half and he fired around.
Yeah.
Obviously they had to abandon the run, but it was obviously the best game he looked all season.
Right.
Which it's good to see him look comfortable, which he hasn't looked comfortable.
Yeah.
So that was good to see. And who knows? I mean, it's long season. We say this all the time. And to talk about who's the best in coming out of the East, Ric Flair always said it the best.
He had a lot of famous quotes.
You got to beat the best. Yes, he
Well, Montreal only having 15 yards of total offense a third quarter did not help their cause at all. No. You know, and then, like you said, man, Ottawa just came out and just played. But, you know, then the flip side of that is Montreal didn't do anything when given the opportunity when they had the ball.
Yeah. And Montreal had 469 yards for the game.
Yeah.
So they had a very impressive game overall, but like I said, that 15 minute window where it just seemed like, hey, what's happening?
Yeah. All right. Let's see what else we got here. We've got, so Davis Alexander was 22 of 30 for 345 yards, two TDs, no interceptions. Jake Mayer, three TDs and one interception. Pimpleton over with Ottawa, kickoff return touchdown. Kickoff return touchdown threat nearly flipping the ending. This is what happens when I do PowerPoint. Can't remember why I wrote it the way I wrote it. It just sounds wonky. But again, the Ottawa offense showed real fight after. Especially after the Drew Brown trade, which we didn't even talk about, how much that's going to impact the team going down the road.
I just watched the Ottawa kickoff return for a touchdown. So I think that score made the game look a little bit closer than the actual result was. So,
yeah. Well, again, special team. It goes to the importance of special teams, especially in this game. How much that play not only was, you know, kickoff returns, but just hitting that extra point.
It seems like special teams for a lot of teams this year, it's making or breaking a lot of games. And I don't remember being like this in years past, but it's definitely good. It's exciting, guys. I think it just reinforces the importance of having to play all three phases of football.
Right. No, I am definitely, you're right. Yeah, it kind of goes, with Ottawa coming back like they did, it shows that they are making making progress. So we'll see what happens next week. Though I don't know, I haven't looked that far ahead in the schedule here. Is who's on a bye for next week? Take a look at.
I just had it up.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up here.
Well, while you're looking that up, let me ask you guys. What do you guys think the quarterback room in Ottawa looks like? Are they going to stick it out with who they have, or do you think they're going to make the switch?
I think they're going to stick with Mayer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he played a good game. But it's, again, everything that's around him. So,
everything around him. Yeah.
And again, remember Mayer, he's the guy that replaced Bo Levi Mitchell. So, I mean, this is a good quarterback. Again, I think you got a new coach, you got a new system. And I mean, they still haven't gelled yet.
Yeah, I think Mayer played well enough to keep it for. I wouldn't be surprised if it's week to week at this point.
Yeah, Right.
I mean, it's just you don't have the room. You don't have the room to go 0-8. That's the tough part. You just don't.
No, no, no. Well, talking about next week. So we got week 5 coming up. It's Canada Day week. But there is no game on Canada Day, which I found odd. Usually, it is Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday.
It is Wednesday. True. That's true. But the way the CFL schedule is, because of the odd number of teams, usually, and again, maybe it's just it's been 7 years since we've been on a Wednesday with Canada Day. But have a game on Canada Day, it just seems weird.
And I think with the CFLPA, I thought it's a minimum of 5 days between games. So I don't think, because this past week they played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which they are again this week. I don't think they were able to match anybody up to do.
I remember that.
Cause you can't have a team on a bye. Like there's rules of how this all plays out where, I remember last year's schedule, like BC had 3 games where they had 5 days off and in between. And they were like, we have the most of anybody. And they're up in arms about how they were getting shafted being on the farthest West Coast, things like that. So I can see why, but I think it has to do with the time between games for rest.
Right. So for next week, we got Toronto. So Thursday night game, Toronto-Calgary. Toronto at Calgary. The Friday night game is the Riders at the Red Blacks. Then the next game, the final game in Kelowna, going back for those who are listening, don't know why they're playing up in Kelowna. That's because of the World Cup in Vancouver. So Edmonton's at BC. Be curious to see if we've got a crowd, just as many people show. I would expect you're going to have a huge turnout for this game because it just looked like an event more than just a football game. And then the big game to me is the Winnipeg Hamilton game in Hamilton. That's going to be a statement game either way. I mean, if Hamilton comes out and just puts it to Winnipeg, the question is are Winnipeg's glory days past? And is Hamilton on the rise? Because Hamilton is the team now with the longest Grey Cup drought. So that's what we got coming up here. So with all that said, so we've wrapped up talking about the week that was, talking a little bit about the week that's coming up here. But I wanted to look back a little bit for the final part of this too, because I was looking at my social media feed. And I'm seeing a lot of guys who are big UFL supporters, for whatever reason, are now discovering that the CFL, they play football in Canada. Now, this is on my social media feed, which kind of brought back memories of 5 years ago. Mike, I don't know how well you remember 5 years ago. Dave, I know you remember it well because we used to have conversations about this. But way back when the CFL was a much different league in terms of the financial outlook of the league, when the pandemic hit, and then you had the XFL going away because of the pandemic, and then you had the XFL going into bankruptcy, and then The Rock and all his people bought it for pennies on the dollar. So we had a new league that was being planned. All of a sudden, talking with probably, you know, we'll call, I mean, I still say that, you know, would argue the CFL is, the Canadian football has a much longer history, especially with the Grey Cup, than what the NFL does. But with a football entity that's been around for over 100 years, well, you know, 100 plus years now, talking, it was more like having a cup of coffee, well, as we learned later, more of having a cup of coffee, talking about, well, if we ever did talk about a merger, what would those merger talks look like? And then, of course, the explosion on social media, fueled in large part by podcasts like this. And at the time, you had a ton of XFL podcasters out there. You had the Mark Cast, you had Mark Perry, his podcast, the XFL show, which, so you had a lot of people talking on both sides. And there was a lot of, you know, speaking of, and looking at it from an American perspective who loves Canadian football, a lot of misunderstandings about what the CFL means to Canada. So I just thought it was, I just wanted to touch upon that as we're talking about Canada Day, because now the Canadian Football League is on a much better financial footing. Things are definitely on the upswing. But going back to what I said, you know, you're seeing a lot of people, and the UFL has done very well this past year. They're talking expansion. Just thoughts on kind of that whole time period and where, in comparison to where we are now. Mike, let me ask you this. 5 years ago, I know always been an XFL supporter, spring football. What were your thoughts when the CFL and the XFL were talking about a merger?
First thought that I came to mind was somebody's hurting for money. I don't know who's hemorrhaging money at the moment, but I always thought it would be tough just because it's two different styles of football. You know, your American football and Canadian football. So is the XFL, are they going to do CFL rules, or is north of the border, are they going to come down and play American football rules? So I just thought it was too many intangibles like that to where it would actually come to fruition. But just like you guys, I just took a step back and was just watching the back and forth and not really sure what to make of it. I know for a while, I don't know what it was, Toronto was the team. Everybody was saying Toronto's going to go to the XFL. Toronto's going to go, but
not everybody. Mark Perry and UF and his XFL news hab were pushing that conspiracy theory. you know, I'm still sore about that, because it was just, and I think it originally started with somebody from the Canadian press talking. I don't know. There was just, there was more speculation than there really was hard news at the time. And that to me was, to me, and just looking at it in hindsight, that's where it kind of hurt football fans in general. Why are we arguing about it? We all want football. Man, that's what happened in the pandemic when there was a lack of solid news and there was a whole bunch of uncertainty. Like, okay. And then you had guys, one guy in particular, Argo Fluffy. I don't know if he's still on social media. I'll have to check. But he was like the voice of reason, because he was sitting there and he diagrammed, okay, here's how we could make it work for both leagues. And he redesigned the field. And I think it was a 100-yard field with 15-yard end zones and keeping the same width as the Canadian football, which is supposed to be happening next year, the plan for the CFL. So, Dave, your thoughts on this?
I agree 100% with Mike. It was about money. And I think what fueled all the speculation was the statement that came from the CFL,
right,
was very vague.
Yes.
And I think at the end of the day, Redbird Capital was worth, well, had assets of $5 to $6 billion. And the CFL was going, hey, you invested in this league, would you be interested in investing in our league? And I think, honestly, I think that's where the discussions were. And I don't think it ever, I don't personally, no proof, I don't think it ever came to the point of taking the two leagues and molding them or doing anything other than we nine CFL owners going, we have an investment opportunity for you. You have a lot of money and you like football. What do you think?
Yeah.
And I just don't think they could come up with anything that was a viable option, because I think Redbird had so much money tied into the XFL at that time. I don't think they could free enough of their assets to then go place it into another football league when they already had Fenway Sports. They already had Liverpool. Right. They already in this. They're stretched. They have a lot of money, but is it cash? Is it readily available to do another investment? And since then, they've gone from the value of $5 or $6 million in assets to like $15 billion in assets. So
yeah,
the fact that they're so flushed over here with the UFL now, and now the CFL, there's in a lot of the, there's no reason to have these conversations now because the situation has changed where they don't need to have a CFL doesn't need to have an outside partner when they can keep it in-house.
Yes.
And a couple of teams have changed hands in that time. I think the CFL as a whole have become more wealthier in the aspects of ownership. So I think at the time they're doing their due diligence, and it was never the owners of the CFL teams were not willing to say, hey, we could use some investment, because that's would send the wrong signal to the fan base that was already struggling with is this going to keep going? And then just more fuel, and it just got out of control until finally it was just
no one talked
about it, and it moved on.
Yeah, thank God it. Thank God that ended. So you know, going back to just, it's nice to see a lot of younger UFL fans now kind of discovering the CFL, and it's just nice to see everybody's on the same page, at least fandom. I mean. I look back at it, some of the things that were reported in the XFL media and all of it, to me, a lot of that XFL reporting 5 years ago was just pure speculation based on a conversation, you know, based upon one, I think, Canadian reporter saying, hey, I heard something, and it spun out of control. But the Argos going to the XFL, anytime I read XFL, every time I see the word news hub attached to a news story, in my mind, I'm like, yeah, no, let's triple check their sources, because they were the ones who were like, yep, Argos are moving to the XFL. Like, yeah, no, they're not. No, they're not.
It got them clicked.
Yes. Yeah. I mean,
wanted.
Yeah. Clickbait. I mean, it's still there now. But we don't see as, at least when it comes to the financial future of both leagues, it seems like they're in pretty good hands now. And I think, you know, maybe we're going to, again, it goes back to, I think, Mike, you and I maybe talked about offline, all of us in our group chat. You know, I've been a huge skeptic of spring football in America for 40 plus years. But after this season, I'm not so much of a skeptic. I'm like, okay, well, maybe it is starting to work. It's starting to find its niche, our niche, or however we say it in English, in the American sports landscape now moving forward with expansion plans with the UFL. Can you see, both of you, them going to, you know, the mid-sized cities, your Louisville, you know, more towns like Louisville, and there's a lot of mid-sized cities that could easily support a UFL team if they keep doing it like they've been doing it with this past year, with making it more like minor league baseball, you know, promotions, you know, giving fans and their kids to come out and see a game on a Sunday or Saturday afternoon. So I ask you, Mike, I'll throw that one to you first.
I would say when you start making the game more about family-friendly events, I don't know. I'm sure we've all been there. We've all gone to an NFL game at some point, and it's very easy between three or four tickets, parking, food, and any of the miscellaneous things, souvenirs, whatnot. It's easy to just drop over $1,000 just like nothing. You know, in the UFL, it's very even just going to the championship game. In DC, it was very family oriented, family priced. I felt like when I left the game, I felt like I had money left over and I didn't have to take a second mortgage out. So it was very refreshing. As far as, you know, the cities, I am of the opinion that college cities, you know, are great, but even more over than that, I would say avoid. And I think they've done a great job for the most part. I would say that the cities that right now are struggling are proof that you should avoid cities that have NFL franchises. You know, you see what's happening with Dallas and with Houston, just to name two. I feel like if they were to go somewhere else, maybe their attendance would be better, but Because there are a lot of fans. I think Louisville is the best example, even Columbus to an extent. There are a lot of hungry football hungry fans that don't want to go to an NFL game, that just want to have a family outing and not, you know, go bankrupt in the process. Right. So it really it's about making, I would say it's about making those memories. That's what's going to really attract people to keep returning. It's easy to shorthand fans thousands of dollars and thanks for coming, somebody else is going to pay that much. It's easy to do that, but when you're the NFL, but when you're a league like the UFL, you're trying to build that trust and that rapport with your fans. I think you see it a lot, even with, and I wouldn't even call it minor league baseball. Look at what the Savannah Bananas are doing. Yeah, you know, they're putting fans first. And actually, I just got done watching a documentary, and in their hallway, in their locker room.
Is that the one on ESPN?
It is.
Okay, I got to watch that.
They have a sign that says, tonight is somebody's first time ever. So the premise behind that is make it about the fans, make it a good memory. Don't take advantage of the opportunity. So I think if the UFL can, you know, follow that that mindset, I think only good things will come.
Yeah, that's the thing. With Rapoli, I mean, I'm not, you know, the whole Brennan Sorsby thing. I mean, I think that's not a good look for the league if he comes into the UFL. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but and overall, yeah, what he's been doing has been great. And, you know, I mean, I could definitely, if they keep doing what they've been doing this past season as their template, I think the UFL has a long-term future. And again, that's, I mean, Dave, you and I have talked about this with spring football. Heck, I mean, I even sat down with, you know, Tim Hanlon over at Good Seats Still Available several years ago. And the outlook back then, I mean, Tim, you know, is an old fart like myself, who has seen a lot of failed leagues over the East, seen more than I have, because this whole show is centered around leagues that don't exist anymore. But I know I'd be curious to talk to Tim now, and at some point we're going to have him on the ask him to come on the show. But I'm curious to see what his opinion of where the UFL and spring football is now. Cause again, the future is looking bright. I'm not saying you got to wear shades, but the future is definitely looking bright with spring football. And on that note, just a couple housekeeping, things here before we sign off. Our planned show, the Alternative Sports History Show, is coming hopefully at some point this summer. We've got the website. I've got everything lined up. But now I'm in the technical planning stages. And as I was explaining to Dave and Mike the other day, running sports simulations using the software I have, which is some of the most popular software packages out there. But I had a show all ready to go, and as I was working on it, I was using the company's baseball program, and then saw in their baseball program that Joe Niekro, who was pitching at age 72. I'm like, wait a minute. Uh-oh. So I looked at their football package. And O.J. Simpson playing in 1989 was just not going to work with this simulation. Like, I had everything planned out for the first show. I kind of planned it, thought in my mind, we'll do this in July till we get, you know, people in the know from Buffalo. I'm like, okay, I got to redo everything now. So it's still on track, but it's going to be, it's. For those who are listening on the Sports History Network, that's where we're at. It's coming. It's just a question of time, and I gotta go back to the drawing board on all my planned simulations now, because it just, seeing Joe Niekro throwing heaters at age 72, like, I can't trust the data.
Let's be honest. He never threw heaters at 32.
Well, yeah, no, that's true. That's true. He was a knuckleballer, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, ain't good. And then seeing OJ still running, you know, in the backfield for the Buffalo Bills at age, you know, in 1989 when he What did he retire? 79 or 80?
I think 80.
Yeah.
Right after the 49ers, he had that little stint.
Yeah, and then I go in and looking at the software, and it's like, well, it's not exactly. I'm like, listen, if you're going to do a sports statistical, if you're going to have a game based on sports stats, don't you think you would have a, when they retire, you can't use them anymore? But apparently not with this certain software package. So
OJ looked great in those Hertz commercials, and that was in the early 90s.
He did. I mean, naked, that was the thing.
The Naked Gun?
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he even still doing rap videos or something towards the end?
I'm not sure. I remember from the Hertz commercials. That was the funny thing, jumping over the seats in the airport.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, there's that whole other, we don't really have time to talk about it now. But, you know, talking about the Bills, their decision not to put him on the new Wall of Honor going to the new stadium. What are they saying in the Buffalo area? People pissed off about it, or is it like 50-50?
You know what? It's hard. It's hard to say because it has to be based on what you're looking at, what you're posting on, because you have a lot of opinions, and that's what it is. Just like everyone's going to have theirs. You have the thought of it's a community facility, so it's got to be based on community standards. Right. Then you have people going, it's about a football player, what he did in the field. If we're going to categorize, are they good people? Who does go up there? Like it's obviously a much larger discussion at a different time, but it's definitely getting the people not talking about Super Bowl expectations in June.
Well, that's probably good. And this is, and let's face it, this is the time of the year where it's kind of like dead space with football news.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the Brendan Sorsby thing, you got the OJ thing. I mean, the trade deadline's come and gone. So we've already talked about the trades. So really, this is kind of the dead time of year, American football wise. Canadian football, obviously, it's, you know, things are up and running, and you know, it's too bad. Speaking, and one of the final things before we sign off here, if you ever, Sports Illustrated did, I forget how many, 10 years ago, this is when Peter King was at Sports Illustrated, when he was the Monday morning quarterback. I mean, they had a full, back when Sports Illustrated was on its decline, but at least still mattered. But they did a whole candidate, they did a Canada week, which, if you Google it, you might be able to find snippets of those articles. And it had Peter King going to Saskatchewan, and it was just, to me, it was, you know, way, and this was 10 years ago. It was just, you know, one of those nice things if you're getting a little dead time at work or something and the boss isn't around, like, oh, I need a break from reality. And so, you know, reading CFL stuff, which now that I'm retired, I cannot openly say I did that a lot when I worked, because sometimes you just needed a break from the, you know, I did investigate criminal investigation. So, every now and then when I needed a mental health break, I would go to football, and that's where I found it. So, if I find it, I'll try to put it, you know, in the show notes, but, it's definitely worth, even 10 years later, definitely a good read. So, enough of me rambling on here, guys. Final thoughts before we sign off?
Dave?
Anybody? Any Bueller?
Another exciting week of CFL action. 8 teams are playing, and it should be a lot of fun.
Mike?
Yeah, I think to piggyback on what you just said, Dave, definitely looking forward to it. I think it's a tale of two sides. On one side of the coin, you have how are the home teams going to fare with home field advantage, especially with the BC game, because that's not their normal, obviously their normal home field. So it'll be interesting to see if they can utilize the locals to help them with being at home. And then on the other hand, I mean, the way it's been, I don't know, but the elements, you know, if we're not getting rain, we're getting some really wicked heat. So it's going to be interesting to see how all the teams and all the coaches, how they're going to respond to the elements, whether it's rain or if it's just, like I said, this unbearingly hot and humid weather we're getting. So I'm definitely looking forward to those storylines heading into the next week and see which teams can maybe turn it around and which teams are going to keep going in the right direction.
Yep. So, all right, guys. Well, on that note, everybody who is listening, you can find us at I'm sounding like an old person. GridironAmerica.net. I'm not going to do like my mom does. www. No, it's GridironAmerica.net. And also on social media, Twitter, we're at X, we're at Gridiron AM Radio, and everywhere else, we're at Gridiron America. So if you got any questions, complaints, ideas for shows, questions, anything you want to ask, or just, troll us, that's where we're at. So, for everybody tuning in, on the live stream that we're ending right now and on the podcast and later, if you're watching this elsewhere, if you're watching this on YouTube or Twitch or any place else that we're on, thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye and happy Canada Day.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.